Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Edge Talk. My name is John Johnson. As usual, I am sitting in Glasgow, Scotland. And tonight I'm delighted to be joined by two... I wouldn't know what you'd describe. I can't remember the name of somebody who goes to a dojo is... but two people from Coder Dojo in Scotland. We've got Craig Steele and Greg Huchinski. Good evening, gents.
Hello.
Hello.
You can call us Sensei, if you like. How does that sound? That sounds very dojo-like.
Yeah. So, we'll just start off, as usual, by asking, maybe I'll ask Craig first, just give us a bit of background, where you sort of come from, your sort of elevator pitch life story, and what you do.
So my background is computing science. So I studied computer programming, computing science at university. But at the time, you know, I was always interested because it was the third subject. You know, it wasn't my main subject that I'd chosen. And when I started doing computing, I thought, actually, this is a lot more interesting than I was led to believe when I first found out about it. And it got me sort of questioning, you know, obviously this is, you know, an important skill that there'll be a lot of jobs using in the future. And I thought, how can we teach this better? Because it's still, you know, a relatively new subject. So I've started getting involved with education and computing education, and how can we teach things like programming better. So I'd been doing some stuff with Scottish Government and SQA at the time, sort of around those different areas. But round about that time, I also realised that if you wanted to make a more immediate difference to young people and potentially getting them interested in the subject and choosing it, it might be better to do something a bit more proactive. So round about 3 years ago, I started a thing called Coder Dojo in Scotland. So it was a thing that originally had been started in Ireland, and it's basically free coding clubs for young people that are run by people from technology backgrounds. So around about that time, I emailed people, you know, that I went to uni with, or friends that I had that worked in technology companies or worked in academic institutes, and sort of said, you know, would you like to share your knowledge? Could we get together and set up a club for young people where they can come and learn to build apps, games, websites, whatever it is that they want to do, but give them that sort of space where, you know, you could meet like-minded peers? Because there was clubs out there for, you know, people who were into football or dance or books or music, but there wasn't really a club out there where you could meet someone else who had, you know, similar interests to you in terms of technology. So that was about three and a bit years ago now, and now Coder Dojo is right across the world and also right across Scotland as well. And that's how I met Greg.
So, Greg, you, I guess, were somebody who was contacted by Craig at some point.
Yeah, so just to kind of do the very rapid-fire version of I guess, my career leading up to Coder Dojo is, firstly, I should say... bit different to Craig is that this is a more of a kind of part-time volunteer thing for me, Coder Dojo, whilst Craig can tell you more of his role, which is more of a full-time thing. Mine is also a background in computing science. I went to university at 16 and did computing for 4 years, and then did a PhD in computing because I was thinking of going down academic path. So obviously I did things like tutorials and things like that with students, but then went on to became a software engineer and worked at Amazon.com for 8 years. And then a couple of years ago, I decided to work on my own startup, so left Amazon. That gave me a bit of free time. And around that time, just when I was leaving Amazon, we'd had some engagement with, I think it was Larbert High School, or one of the high schools in the Central Belt, and they were looking for people to come into companies, to come into their secondary school and kind of give people an example of computing. So I led the kind of Amazon drive to create a kind of a game to that kids could play to kind of move a robot around an Amazon warehouse as a kind of introduction to what you can do with computing in future. And I guess that kind of lit the candle for me of, oh, this is a cool thing. Kids are interested in learning about computers, even if they don't have much of a computing background. And then with a bit more free time in my hand and flexibility, because I'm now working for myself, I looked around and I found that Coder Dojo, one of these dojos had been started up in Stirling. I went along, and from then on I've been helping out. And then about a year and a half ago, the main guy who was running it, the dojo, left. So I kind of took on the reins of running the dojo from then on. So yeah, that kind of takes me up to date on where I am with Coda Dojo.
Brilliant. It sounds a fantastic opportunity for kids, I guess, to get access to experts like yourselves, who, you know, have been through the, you know, the academic and the commercial world, as opposed to perhaps somebody. Well, I'm a primary school teacher, you know, so I've never been out there doing this sort of thing at all. Craig, you said Scotland. Is Scotland where Coda Dojo started, or?
No, it started in Ireland.
Oh, right, yeah, so it's the same.
The same, yeah. Basically, I'd read about James Welton and Bill, who are the founders of Coda Dojo, and, you know, I saw that as a model that seemed to be quite exciting in Ireland, and I knew that I wanted to start something similar. It's better to go with that and be part of that movement rather than just trying to, you know, start something brand new completely. So I'd contacted them at the time and said, you know, this would be, I'd really like to do this in Scotland. Do I, you know, what do I need to do, you know, to get permission to do that? But it was just a case of, no, as long as you keep to those values, which is like Coda Dojo will always be free and it'll always be open, and it's about getting young people involved in programming and technology, then, you know, you can go off and start your own dojo. So we started the first one at the Science Centre in Glasgow, and that's how it came about.
Brilliant. I just, as usual, forgot to put in, if people are listening live and you want to ask a question that we can throw into the mix, if you just tweet it with the hashtag edutalk, we'll try and pick it up and put it into the show. So the interesting thing, I noticed one person who retweeted the announcement today was Lorna Campbell from Open Scotland, with an Open Scotland hashtag when she saw we were talking to Coda Dojo, and you mentioned this open thing. What do you mean by, you know, you said open, it's free for children, I guess, and mm-hmm. open?
I think, and you can maybe back me up on this, Greg, in case I get the definition wrong, but I think when we're talking about software development movement, there's this, there's a thing called open source, mm-hmm. which is the idea that you publish and you share all your code online for other people to use. And this is something that a lot of software developers do because, you know, if they make something and they want to put it out there and share it so other people can build on top of that and learn from, you know, not so much learn from their mistakes, but, you know, stand on the shoulders of giants. Mm. And we wanted Coda Dojo to sort of have that same sort of feeling about it, where it wasn't like a franchise that sort of closed down. And, you know, the idea being that you could take the sort of basics of how a dojo works and you can sort of expand on that and run it in your own way. And I think that that's what we try to do in Scotland. You know, we have a set of core things that the dojo will always be in terms of for young people, run by volunteers. But we recognise that different people might want to adapt it so that it fits in different areas. So, for example, that might be about different styles of content, different styles of presenting, and how do you make the most of that? Because what might work really well for a group in Glasgow might not work as well for something, you know, in the Highlands or in Dundee. Or if you've got a certain group of mentors who have, you know, really good experience in one area, make the most of that rather than us saying, oh, here's a set curriculum that we're going to follow. And have you felt that's what it's like in Stirling, Greg? Or
Well, I guess there's two elements. One, the initial question was kind of to do with the word open, and I suppose just add to your good summary of, I say, open source software, I guess, is that all of the materials that we create in Stirling and hopefully in other dojos as well is kind of free, and we make it available to any other dojo to use if they want. So there's definitely that open aspect. And in terms of the open, in terms of the flexibility, I mean, definitely from my experience in Stirling is that some of the ideas that I think are regularly run at these essentially programming clubs in Glasgow, we know that they don't work for Stirling, and we've had to adapt our material to the kids who are attending our clubs. So to be more specific, in Stirling, I think we're getting kids coming to our coding clubs who are maybe on the younger side. So I think the youngest we've got actually is 7. We've got a few 8-year-olds, and the oldest is maybe 15. And I think, Craig, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you seem to have an older age group. And the difference between that is that we have far fewer, less self-direction of kids. And so we have to kind of create material that's more to do with guiding kids to a point where they can hopefully start going off in their own direction, and they've got enough of a basis to start developing their own skills themselves. I think that works in a slightly different way in the dojo in Glasgow. Is that correct, Craig?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of our young people are in the 12 to 17-year-old bracket. In fact, most of them, I would say, are about 13, 14, 15. And as Greg said, at the moment the situation is a lot of them are kind of self-directed. They've learned enough about it that they can sort of have an idea of where they might want to go next. And our volunteers can help get them to that next step. But that didn't happen right away. You know, I think one of the reasons why that's happening at the moment in Glasgow is because a lot of the young people who come to the dojo have actually been coming now for about 2 years. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's some of them who've been to more coder dojos than I have, which, you know, shows that it's the type of thing that they want to, you know, keep coming back to as well, which is great as well. But yeah, and the age difference can be really important because, you know, that there's a certain way about, you know, if you're 8 or 9, what you're going to be able to do is probably going to be quite different from maybe a 13 or 14 year old would be comfortable doing. And that can be everything from the sort of processing the information to sometimes just the sort of reading and typing skills that you need as well. So that has to be reflected in the stuff that's covered in the dojo.
I'm thinking that's usually in education, if you're teaching, a year age group, the range isn't great, and the kids have come through the same sort of experiences, and there may be some diversity in abilities and amounts of experience, but it seems quite challenging to start up a club which is open to anybody. And I'm just wondering how that process starts. If you're starting a new one up and people turn up, how do you manage to sort of onboard them and get everybody actively learning, I guess?
I'm happy to take this one first. Just because I think we have maybe hit more of this at Stirling, just because of the age range and the youth of the young people who are coming. What we discovered is that every month we were trying to come up with, because we discovered that the kids who were coming weren't really self-directing because they didn't have enough kind of technical competence to be doing their own projects. We were doing quite a lot of kind of projects. We'd come up with a new project every month. I think there was one time I did Minecraft, like it was basically coding inside Minecraft. There was another one where we did some stuff involving, if you've heard of Raspberry Pis, it was to do with connecting up Raspberry Pis with fruit pastels or something, and then squeezing the fruit pastel and an MP3 happened. And what we ran into was that this was a problem every month because the kids weren't making any technical progress. So what we've actually standardized on, which you can see on our Coder Dojo Stirling website, is that we've come up with a notion of badges. So we have a very loose idea of a curriculum. This is just for Stirling, it's not rolled up anywhere else, where we've got, if people turn up and they have no clue and they haven't even brought a laptop with them, we say, here's a laptop, go and have a look at these badges, and they kind of start down this process of getting badges, and that gradually builds up their technical knowledge to a point where hopefully they can start self-directing. We're starting to see that with a few kids now who've been through some of our badges. But that's how we kind of address the problem in Stirling, of trying to raise that kind of technical level of expertise amongst the people attending.
So just by the by, are you using the sort of Mozilla Open Badges type thing, or have you got your own?
I think Craig can talk about. I think Craig has used some of the open the Mozilla badges, specifically in Stirling. We tried to keep it simple because it was almost like what was the lowest cost way we could do this. So we just made our own badges and assembled essentially our own actual physical badges and got them printed on the internet. So people do the work, and then it gets kind of checked off with a mentor, and then we actually just give them an actual badge that they can put their sticker they can put in their laptop. So it's quite cool and rewarding when you see a kid's laptop and they've got like 7 different badge stickers on their laptop, means they've actually learnt something with us.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think that recognising the learning that happens in the dojo is really important as well. And the, you know, the different ways to do that, and sort of badges and belts are different ways that dojos around the world do it. We have some open badges that are available to any of the dojos in the world, and we sort of created some in Scotland. And what we wanted to do was recognise things as well, that what is the learning that takes place that you would perhaps only get to do as part of a dojo, that you wouldn't get to do as part of maybe reading a book or doing something through Code Academy online or something. So, for example, we've got open badges that that recognise things like, okay, I have worked as part of a group to create a, you know, to create a game or an app or something, so you can get a badge for that. Or a badge that says, you know, I've helped someone else debug their code. Hmm. So, you know, we can see the evidence of that at a dojo. You could get a badge for that. Or even something along the lines of, you know, I have stood up in front of my peers and presented my work. And I think that stuff like that, complemented by more specific skill badges, things like, you know, I have made a game, or I've built something using, you know, web technologies or Scratch or whatever, I think they're all ways of recognising that learning. And maybe, you know, maybe in a few years' time, if some of these people are going to apply for jobs and they can say, well, actually, I do have experience working as part of a, you know, a team to create a software product, something like that, that might help them get into that first interview.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I mean, there's a lot of talk in education about credentialing learning that's not sort of exam focused, and these sort of softer skills, I guess, working together, and presentations and stuff come right in there. It's quite interesting to see that coming in from outside the sort of formal educational world.
And part of that happened because Mozilla, who were one of our first funders for Codeology in Scotland, obviously they're behind open badges.
Yeah.
And my job just before I'd started with doing Coder Dojo as a sort of full-time person was with SQA, so it's probably a surprise that I had those things on my mind.
Yeah.
I should point out that it's kind of interesting that we there is diversity, I think, in what the different dojos are doing. So there's this kind of trade-off, I guess, between each dojo doing its own thing based on the expertise that it has and the people involved, versus actually when a good idea happens, like, for example, the Mozilla badges, I think, are being used in Glasgow, but currently not in Stirling. The badge concept seems to be a good one, but it's a question of how much effort is it to kind of roll out across, is it adopted across multiple dojos, or is it just adopted by one or two who think it works for them? So you will get this kind of diversity between the dojos, because there is no kind of fixed way of doing things as long as you stick within the tenets of Coder Dojo itself.
No, I think that's a really good idea, because I know, especially if you're working with younger children, the badges can be challenging in some ways to get applied and all the rest of it. So it sounds like you've found a really good solution to that. I wonder, Greg, is it worth, just for folk listening, to maybe sort of spell out one or two of the sort of first activities you would maybe give to the younger end of the children?
Sure. Well, I don't know if within Skype I can drop a link in. I'm attempting to drop a link into our Skype discussion, but it's basically a link to a badge on our Coder Dojo Stirling website. And all we really did was, if you kind of have a look at that page, we've kind of got a different set of areas, one called I'm New to Coding, another one called I Want to Create Stories, Games and Animations Using Scratch, another one about websites, another one about learning how to code. And the idea is you kind of start in one of the areas you're interested in, and we attempted to build up a kind of set of badges based on easily accessible material that was online, because the idea was that hopefully, you know, we're running monthly programming clubs, these dojos, so we see kids like for 2 hours every month. Ideally they would be spending time at home, if they're motivated, learning more about computing. So we basically built a set of badges using online material. So I think actually the first badge we have is really just nudging the kids towards completing something called the Hour of Code, which was, there was quite a lot of noise about last year or the year before? It's on a website called code.org, which is American, and I think it had, sorry, I just clicked on it, it's about to play a video at me. But basically,
Mark Zuckerberg is going to start teaching you how to code.
Yeah. So the first thing we put the kids on is, oh, go and learn, do this hour of code course, and I think it just takes you through some basic programming concepts, and you're kind of doing kind of drag and drop programming with kind of navigating like some character through like a maze and saying go right, go left, kind of thing. Mm. And that's how we start them off. And then after that, we're nudging them towards doing Scratch, which maybe Craig can talk about, or I don't know what the experience is using Scratch at Glasgow. And then we have a combination of materials that we've created ourselves on Khan Academy, another online site for building websites. And then we found another way into nudging kids how to code with an excellent website called Code Combat, which is like you're playing an adventure game. And you get to rescue villagers and kill orcs and that kind of thing using code. And then the plan is, I think, that is that once, if kids have done a bunch of these badges, they'll be starting to get to the point where they can use their initiative and start going off and doing their own projects. And we're already starting to see that, which is reassuring. Mm.
The task that Greg has is the first sort of thing, the Out of Code Challenge. It's a really good tool for anyone to use to sort of, you know, as sort of an introduction to programming, because it covers things like the fundamentals of, okay, what to be a programmer, you really need to sort of think about things in a certain way. You know, can you think logically through a set of instructions? And the task uses a visual programming language so that you don't have to like learn lots of code to type in. It's like little Lego blocks almost that you click together to solve the problem. And it's actually quite interesting because you can very quickly tell the young people who have that sort of affinity, you know, they understand the logic, they can think through the problem. And then there's certain young people who would just, you know, look at it and get frustrated and give up after sort of a minute or two. And that's when you can start to see, okay, this person seems to have the aptitude, they're solving through this, or they're not necessarily getting it right first time, but they understand why they're making the mistakes. And I think that's sort of a really good, although it seems like a simple game, it's actually a really good introduction to programming. And even as you get to it's got like 10 levels in it. And as you get to level 8 and 9 and 10, you know what, it doesn't matter how long you've been programming for, those are quite tough challenges. And it forces you to think about it. I'm guessing you're laughing, Greg, because you get stuck at level 9 and 10.
I have to confess, some of the material I've never actually done. I haven't earned my own badges, tragically. I've done part of the material. So basically, when it gets to level 10, the kid's doing something, it's like a crash course in logical thinking, where you're like, oh, okay, now what do I do? It's quite good.
I really like this kind of approach where you've lifted bits and pieces from different places and put them into a program to sort of get these kids on board. I was kind of interested that bit you said that, you know, it's quite easy to identify quite quickly children who have got, I don't know if it's an aptitude or an attitude, that is towards them. And do you find then that those are the children that go forward, or are you managing to pull in people that are not that way inclined?
Well, I think considering the dojo is kind of like an opt-in thing, you have to want to come back sort of thing, you know, and it doesn't surprise me that the ones who sort of take their time and go through these go through the challenges like this and get that reward of actually getting it right, you know, getting to the end, they're the ones that are motivated to sort of come back again. What's quite hard is you might get a young person who's really into, you know, gadgets and technology, and they turn up and they've never been before and they're like, brilliant, I want to make the next, you know, Minecraft or an interesting game. And it's actually saying, great, well, but to get to that point, you know, let's start here with something smaller. Let's, you know, look at that. And I think, you know, that's the hardest part of the dojo. How do you get those expectations? But the good news is, with all this technology that's available now and the sort of resources that are online that supplement the stuff that we can, you know, deliver face-to-face in the dojo, it's actually easier than ever to get something up and working quite, you know, relatively quickly. It used to be that, you know, you would have to type, you know, tens of lines of code, and all you would get is like a little, you know, your name appearing on the screen. But actually now, with things like, you know, out of code with things like even using web technologies like HTML and CSS, you can see the result quite quickly, and that is motivating. If someone can look at it and, you know, they can see, oh, you know, I made that happen, or I caused a change to happen in the real world, you know, a light going on or something like that, then that's, I think that's quite motivating.
Yeah, I think there's a certain magic for, you know, people who are not yourself, of just doing something and you see a change happen, and that's quite exciting. I'm just kind of, if I dig into that a wee bit, because we know down south in England that they're basically putting coding into the curriculum right from the get-go, and I wondered how this sort of, you know, idea of some children having aptitude and others maybe not being interested fitted with that, and do you think that's a good idea, that everybody should be doing this, or do you think...
You could ask that entire question of any all mainstream state-funded education, really, couldn't you? You could take any subject and say, well, I suppose there's always a trade-off between, you know, like, you have to learn maths and English and things like that, and some kids have a motivation and an aptitude. You could argue, actually, that coding or stuff like that, using computers, becoming sufficiently important that it should be kind of reading, writing, arithmetic, and coding. But inevitably, I guess it's on an individual basis whether a kid, how a kid will take to it or not. And some people do seem to be, again, like we do have this self-selecting nature of people coming to the at least the, you know, what I've seen, the Coder Dojo, where some people stick and some people don't. And it's, you know, it's, some people enjoy coding and some people don't. And it's, I think what Craig said, it's really fascinating if you can kind of hook people early with the realization of what computers let you do in terms of like controlling things. Like if you can get someone to create a website on their first day, or like a Flappy Bird game, people are amazed. They've created something, and that is a very strong pull. So again, that maybe it's a way of, if you do introduce this into the mainstream, it's how on earth you motivate it and show that you can do really awesome stuff with it.
Yeah, I think we definitely don't need to turn everyone into a software developer. I think that would be, you know, I don't think that's a good goal to have. But I think that, you know, I think everyone should have an appreciation a little bit of how these technologies work and how does coding, you know, because I suppose in the future so many of our jobs are going to involve around a digital product or digital service of some sort. So we can't just believe it's magic. You know, we have to kind of understand that there might be something behind it. But, you know, I don't know how to approach that in a way that doesn't also turn everyone off the subject as well. But there is an appetite for it, you know. Yeah. People do want to, you know, young people want to learn these things. And it's just, it's also interesting that we've got a lot of people coming to the dojo and more people want to come, yet the people choosing to study this subject, whether it's at school or college or whatever, is for the most part going down as well, which seems to be the opposite from what I'm seeing with people coming and saying, oh, I'm interested in this area.
I mean, that's an obvious worry for a lot of people in Scottish education who have an interest in computing, and the fact that there's a huge lack, I think, at the moment of people with these skills, and there's plenty of jobs for them, but we don't seem to be able to attract them into traditional computing courses at school.
I think computing is a very challenging thing to teach, particularly nowadays, because it's so fast moving. So, I mean, I actually, a few months ago, I was clearing out some of my notes from university and actually high school, and I did my hires in 1995, 96, I think, and I was looking at the higher notes, and I think they were from 10, 15 years before, as in some of the information, and it still was relevant in that time frame. And nowadays, the pace of technological change has changed so much with the internet that it just must be a very challenging subject to teach in a kind of mainstream educational context, because the speed at which everything is changing is just so rapid. I mean, obviously, there are these core ideas in computing, I guess, you know, like Craig alluded to, with kind of breaking down problems and how you approach coding, but everything moves so fast, it is, I think, a very challenging thing to teach compared with, I mean, something like Master English. There may be new materials and new ways of teaching it, but maths you know, the speed at which new math is discovered or invented, in, likewise with English, is much lower than computing.
And there's definitely something to be, you know, there's a challenge in the schools where, you know, from a technological standpoint, like, say, for example, a really awesome, cool, technical tool comes out on a Friday night. I would be able to download it and use it on the Saturday morning at a dojo because I'm in full charge of all the equipment and things like that. Whereas I know from speaking to certain teachers that the idea of getting extra software, putting on their machines, that could take months or it might not even be, you know, possible that term. And it's things like that that we can react to quite quickly in the dojo. But, you know, in a school environment, something like, or even just having, you know, access to devices in school, like modern web browsers like Chrome or Firefox. I'm laughing, but it's, you know.
That's my job. So I'm kind of aware of the challenges of XP on lots of machines still. just a wee question from Fraser Boyd, who's in Stirling, and he must have a Boys Brigade connection, and he's heard a few of the boys there talking about Coder Scott and just saying our kids in S1 being taught coding in schools here. And I guess, Fraser, that will depend. They may be in some schools. And his follow-up question is, if not, it might be something we could do with them in our Boys Brigade programme. So is that the kind of situation that you guys would be interested in? Is that?
So certainly they could take the, you know, if Fraser follows the link that you tweeted to the badges, you know, Coder Dojo's open, so you can see all the resources that are used. So you could use them as part of the, you know, the BB's club or whatever places like that as well. And I think that's interesting as well because, you know, then it's going to be a different audience than the type of young person who would maybe naturally come to a dojo as well.
And that sort of leads on. Do you actually do dojos as after-school clubs, or do you go into schools and do work, or is it completely separate from schools?
Pretty much complete. We've tried to keep it sort of separate from schools and colleges. And also we just don't have the capacity to do that. In terms of, we've got hundreds of volunteers across the country who are giving up their time to do this, but in terms of people working on Coder Dojo in the UK, there's only two of us working on it full time, and that's myself and Claire in the UK. And, you know, our remit is to look after these clubs and help people start up their own clubs. So if a school group wanted to run a Coder Dojo after school, certainly we could help them get started with it.
Yeah, I should say as a pure volunteer, actually, one of the challenges is trying to run a dojo over a year and multiple clubs a year. And you kind of need to get this balance between making sure that you do a good job, but it doesn't take over your life. And you need to work out kind of clever ways of how do I not spend time. I'm sure this is even worse in a teaching context, but how do you not spend time, too much time, creating the material for the dojo? I mean, ideally, we want to nudge the kids along such that we're more in a kind of helping capacity and the kids are self-directing and we're kind of nudging them and supporting them as needed rather than kind of providing a whole curriculum and, you know, right class, this is what we'll do today. And otherwise, it won't survive with a set of volunteers because it'll just take up too much of the volunteers' time.
Yeah, that's teachers get paid, I guess. I'm looking at the site, and I've just tweeted back to Fraser about, you know, the CoderDojoSterling.com will give him some more information. Yeah. And just
Craig, Craig, do you want to pop in the link to Coder Dojo Scotland as well? Because that's the kind of the one that Craig provides that covers multiple dojos in Scotland. And
other dojos in Scotland are available.
Yeah.
Yes, I realise it's being somewhat biased by the fact that you're talking to somebody from Glasgow and somebody from Stirling.
We'll make sure that all the links go out on the show notes and things. We won't
I'm looking at the Code of Dojo Scotland website now, and it tells
me... Dundee was on tonight.
Dundee was on tonight, yeah. Central Library.
So they were doing some stuff with Google Cardboard, which is a thing that Google have made that's like a virtual reality device that you can build using cardboard. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I've got one, but I bought mine off of eBay, I'm afraid.
That's not in the spirit of it.
It's probably not. But so I'm just kind of picturing this Stirling, and we'll pretend Stirling is, we'll talk about Stirling because it's easier to say a name than, you've got 20 kids coming along for, and it's a couple of hours, which is a reasonably good chunky piece of time. And how many volunteers do you need to handle that number of pupils or children?
Well, it depends on, well, you've kind of touched on one of the challenges of running a dojo, which is volunteers. And I think ideally we're running it with about 4 or 5 volunteers. I think that's quite a nice number because you want people kind of being able to kind of engage with particular kids one-on-one for maybe even 5 minutes. And that seems to work quite well, that if you have a lower number, then there's a bit too much running around. Mm. But the challenge is trying to find volunteers who are A, motivated, and B, somewhat technically minded, or have some level of technical background, or possibly even just technical confidence, as in they've done some of the materials, or they've got an idea. They don't need to be some guru in computing science, but they need to have the confidence that they can help a kid in a with whatever they're doing technically. And yeah, that's one of the challenges. Is over the last year, I've been trying to push, trying to find volunteers, and I think we've now got about 14 or 15 names. So we kind of send out an email every month, and hopefully enough people respond to kind of to cover a dojo with 20 kids. But it does seem to be a different experience in different dojos. So I mean, obviously Craig can talk about the Glasgow experience, and it would be interesting to know about the experience of some of the other dojos in Scotland as to who the volunteers are and how they were found.
Well, there's the same sort of experience as you, Greg, where we've got a pool of volunteers and we ask for them to come along, but the number that we get turning up is not as much, you know, is nowhere near compared to the pool. So for example, for 20 young people in Glasgow, generally we've also got about 4 or 5 volunteers coming along, and that's out of a pool for maybe 80. And those volunteers are some industry people, some people from students who are studying it at the moment, which is good for them too, and you know, other people who are interested in the area. However, there are other dojos in Scotland that are attempting to do it with maybe 1 or 2 volunteers, and that's where it could go wrong. Like we had a dojo in a part of Scotland where it was being run by some really enthusiastic students from that area, but once they'd finished their course and they moved on, there was no one there to keep it going. So it just meant it was difficult to actually get it started again. But it was about finding the right team of volunteers. As Greg said, you can't just do it with one person who's brilliant and committed. You actually need a few people to make that happen. We've used the STEM Ambassador Network, which is great, but also, you know, one of the rules that came down, not rules, but one of the suggestions from Code of Dojo over in Ireland was Code of Dojo's free, but it's not a free ride, in the sense that if there's parents who want their young people to come along to the dojo, then, you know, they can put in as well, they can volunteer, they can come along, because there's some elements of the dojo that are actually, you know, almost admin-like, that you don't need to have a technical knowledge at all, like making sure the room is available, you know, making sure people know when the next session is and sign up for the tickets and things like that as well. So if you're a parent of someone who, you know, might want to come along to a dojo, you can, but you're not a technical person, you could definitely be involved in actually making it happen.
In coming along, and I presume that for some of them, especially the younger children, they maybe just need a hand from people who are not even able to do the tasks themselves.
They can learn as well at the same time.
We've had a few parents who actually have just stayed and worked with their kids, and it seems to be quite a nice experience for the kids and the parents. And actually, we've had the best case now, which is we had One kid turned up, then his kid, he turned up with his dad, and then he turned up with his sister. So now we have one software engineer parent who helps at the dojo, who comes along when his two kids come along. So that seems a very nice way of doing things. We get two kids and a mentor.
Everybody should bring one.
Yes, that would be good.
And again, I'm saying, so there's trying to get this picture in my mind. There's 20 kids come into a space. I guess you need a space that's got reasonable number of tables and goodish Wi-Fi.
Craig, well, do you want to talk about the Science Centre, and I can talk about Stirling Jail?
Yeah, so something like the Science Centre obviously is a great building in the sense of young people are excited about going there. It seems like a cool place to go and have a club, and they've got the facilities for us to have like Wi-Fi and tables. But I also really like Greg's venue in Stirling, which is totally where you wouldn't expect to have.
Well, he just said jail.
Yeah, exactly, a jail.
So I should point out that we're not a working jail. We are Stirling Old Town Jail, which is, I think, is a, basically it's a Victorian custom-built jail, which hasn't been used. I don't know when it closed, but we renovated a decade or so ago. I think it's owned by Stirling Council, and it's mainly offices. So there is an organisation that runs a building called Creative Stirling, and it a fantastic lady called Jo Hall, and they support or aim to support kind of creative industries in Stirling. And I think initially they were the main initiators of running a dojo.
Yeah.
So thankfully we have a very nice arrangement where Creative Stirling kind of give us space in Stirling Old Town Jail. We have a space, and then we have to unfortunately jump through several hoops to prepare for a dojo on a Saturday morning by getting the tables together and making sure that there's Wi-Fi, there's dragging of Ethernet cables throughout buildings, which is so this is actually one of the areas that we want to improve on, which is that we need to have a faster, easier setup, which makes it much easier for hopefully any of our mentors to kind of step up and run the dojo. And ideally it's not me or kind of somebody else who's the kind of more core of the Stirling group.
And so you've got all these kids, they're in their tables, and generally I'm getting the idea that they're all working on different things at different levels, and it's more of a sort of partnering them or guiding them and just being there when they need help.
Pretty much. I mean, usually we start sessions off by maybe showing them all together something cool that we, you know, that's relevant that week, or, you know, an idea for something to get them started. But then they're free to go on and work on their own projects as well. But I think it's good to have something that brings them together, to show them something, so that if someone comes along and they're really interested but they don't have an idea of their own yet, they're not sure what they want to do, they can always take that initial idea and sort of, you know, look into it more or research that way as well. And I think that's nice because it's got the social element where, you know, you're doing something together, but then, you know, you might follow into little groups or work on your own, things like that.
Yeah, in Stirling, I suppose we have something similar, which is since we've established this kind of badge structure, that's the kind of basics of what the kids can start off doing, and we say, oh, this is what you can do. And then what we found is that some kids are doing their own thing. So I think last month, one of the kids I'm most impressed with is has been building an iPhone game that I think he's got it into the App Store. And I've never actually submitted it to the App Store yet, so I'm most impressed with that. And then we had another group of kids who were doing things with trying to build like a Minecraft game.
Oops. Did we lose?
And then you've got some interesting things going on where if you notice one kid's doing something, I try and nudge the mentors to kind of try and bring kids together. So definitely had cases with this Unity 3D game engine where we almost ended up with all those kids on the same table and they were showing one another how to do stuff. So stuff like that I think is good, and it's something that we want to push for more of, which is how do you kind of get the kids engaging with one another and kind of sharing knowledge themselves. And that's something we were thinking about, how on earth we could come up with some new badges or some new approach to getting them engaging with one another more proactively.
Well, it certainly seems that a really good way for, and this is talking from a school point of view, with primary kids, that you usually can find somebody who is helpful in your class and will go the extra mile with something like Scratch, and you can use them as a resource for helping their fellows. And I guess it is an important thing, as you say, if you can get a badge or something around that, that sounds great. We're kind of, I always tell people I'll only keep them for half an hour, and we've kept you for 45 minutes and we've still got a few more questions. But basically, if people are interested either in volunteering or getting involved, they just head to coderdojoscotland.com.
Yep, that's right. And if you get any listeners from outside Scotland, they can go to coderdojo.com and they can find one near them too.
Right. And going the other way, if you've got any listeners who are in the vicinity of Stirling, then they can go look at codedojostirling.com, and that tells them how to what we are and how to become involved and how to contact us.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is that to mention Stirling yet again. I think if you're a teacher and you're starting to look at this sort of stuff in the class, as many of us are, the Stirling kind of track of badges may be a very useful resource for you to look at. I think that people could get a lot of tips.
There's a definite role within Coda Dojo as an organisation, or even, I guess, any form of education establishment. There's an important role which is almost like curating existing material, because as Craig has alluded to with what's on, there's so much information online that there's actually a lot of value in trying to sift through it and provide some structure, which is essentially what these badges are at Stirling. But they could be anything, and it's like, rather than trying to come up with completely new material, actually trying to harness existing material that people have spent huge numbers of man and or woman hours on already creating, curating that into a structured order for kids to go through, I think is really important, and in some ways it's possibly more important than actually coming up with completely new material.
I agree, and that's something that I started to learn at as when we've been doing our dojos, because my first instinct was, great, I'll write something. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, there's hundreds of things out there that you can actually use and base it on, and as Greg said, finding ways to bring that together. Coder Dojo have a sort of collection called the Kata, which is kata.coderdojo.com, which tries to start to bring some of that stuff together. And they try and give it in bite-sized chunks called sushi cards, mm-hmm. which you can sort of print off. And, you know, the idea is that could be one dojo session or one lesson in a classroom as well. So that's one of the things that will be interesting to see how all these things develop over the next year or so.
It looks like a great set of resources, as I say, and very often if you're a teacher, what you actually need is somebody to winnow those down so that you've got project. I said we're going to wrap up. There's a wee question I'd like to sort of cheekily ask you, Craig, because I was along at the Scottish Film and Learning Festival two weekends ago, and I didn't see your session, but when I saw the resources come out of it, it just looked fascinating. Because you said you were, I think, editing a movie in code.
Sort of, yeah. This was a project called Movie Mashup, which was funded by Creative Scotland. And the idea was it was a combination between an arts organisation and some sort of technological partner. So I teamed up with Glasgow Film Theatre, and we produced, basically, we tried to remix the film Gravity, the sort of sci-fi film with Sandra Bullock, to create a workshop that kind of taught a little bit about programming, but at the same time taught a bit about filmmaking as well. And the resources are online on our Coder Dojo Scotland GitHub, which I'll give you the link to as well. And basically the idea was we'd recreated a scene from the film Gravity using Scratch, which is one of the most popular programming languages. But the idea is you could change the outcome of the scene. You know, sometimes you watch a film and you're like, oh, I wish they'd said this, or I wish she hadn't done that, or I wish this unicorn appeared from nowhere. Yeah, exactly. Then you could do that if you could change the code in the scene. So we've got templates up there where it's a scene from the film recreated shot by shot, but then you could go in and you could change the dialogue or you could change the action in the scene by editing the code. So that was really fun. Yeah. And from what I could find online when we were looking at this, no one had really attempted to combine them in this way before. So
no, I mean, just as I say, I saw an odd tweet about it, and then I saw a link to your resources online, and I just thought, ah, you know, there was an awful lot of good things there. I would have loved to have seen that, but I certainly have a look at the resources, and we've got now a great pile which will go in the show notes with the podcast for folk to follow up on, and I think they could be useful, as I say, in many ways, for people who are interested in joining Coder Dojo, for people that are interested in coming, but also for you know, educators to borrow from. It just looks like a fantastic set of stuff.
Brilliant, thank you.
So I just
thank you.
If there's anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up this half hour podcast,
I think the one thing that I want to mention is that we've got a dojo coming up at the end of the month in Murray College, and it's specifically for girls in the Highlands. So if you are a girl in the Highlands, or you know of one who might want to come along and get their first experience of programming, then we've still got tickets available for that. So go to coderdojoscotland.com, and I think that'll be a really good day.
Brilliant.
And I'm trying to think what I can say. I guess I'll say we're running our next dojo this Saturday, although I suspect all of our tickets might have been already booked up. But if you look on our coderdojosterling.com website, you can find out how to sign up on our mailing list, so we'll announce when the next dojo is. And then the other thing I guess I say is, if you are in the Stirling area and you're technically minded, or even a teacher with a kind of technical background, then we're always looking for more people to help us, just because it's actually quite challenging getting a hold of mentors who want to help out every month. Mm. So any help would be much appreciated.
And I'm thinking that teachers could also, you know, because we always want to exploit things, we could exploit, by volunteering, you would learn an awful lot that you could bring to your class.
We had our first teacher volunteering last month with us, and that was really interesting, again, having a quick chat with her about how what she'd got out of the experience, and she seemed very positive and already learnt a bunch of new technologies that she was, I think, probably going to lose in the use in the classroom as well.
Brilliant, yeah, and I think as well that the interesting way you're approaching the education and is, you know, we can think about that, throw that into the mix. So it just really leaves me to say, Craig, just thanks very much for coming on and talking and giving your experience and your time up.
Thank you.
It's been brilliant.
Pleasure.
And to people out there listening, I'm just going to hang up the broadcast now. Good night.